I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days.
Once a month, Patricia T. O'Connor visits us to talk about the English language, and we take lots of your calls at 646-829-3985. Or, if you prefer, as many do, you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Pat is the author of a number of books on the English language, and popular enough so that she sometimes is a clue in the New York Times crossword puzzles, because they just love Woe Is I.
Your first book. The letter combination ISI doesn't often, I mean, it's convenient for puzzle writers to use, and there's no other clue for ISI.
So they stuck with you.
Yes.
So there's Woe Is I, there's You Send Me, Words Fail Me, and Origin of the Specious, mm-hmm. and Thou, Woe Is I, Junior, mm-hmm. and I'm assuming there's another book in the works?
Possibly.
Possibly, okay.
We'll see.
Meanwhile, today we're going to talk a bit about all those cat words. Mm-hmm. There were so many cat words, and
yes.
I don't know whether they tell us something about cats or whether they – or Mrs. Cats.
Well, cats are a big part of our culture and have been for centuries. And we've had cat expressions almost ever since we've had English. Some cat expressions that sound very old, though, are really pretty new.
Well, what are some of the older ones, and why did they develop?
Well, tomcat, you know, the practice of calling a male cat a tomcat evolved because since the 1300s, the name Tom has been a generic guy name, as in every Tom, Dick, and Harry, a generic kind of nickname for every man.
And then tomcat wound up being applied to men as well, people who...
It started being applied to any male animal, like a tom turkey, a tom cat. Tom cat is just the most familiar one.
Yeah, but a tom turkey doesn't do what a tom cat does. If I say a man is a tom cat, I'm saying
you mean he acts like a male cat on the prowl, which brings us to another cat expression, caterwaul, which emerged very long time ago. Actually, it's first recorded in Chaucer as a word for the sound of male cats, or any cats, I guess, in the mood for love, to put it delicately, I guess. You know how they make all those caterwauling sounds? It's one of those imitative
words. It'd be like a
cat
whale.
Yes. And the word is imitative of the sound.
Onomatopoeic.
Yes, it is. Like mew or meow. Mm-hmm. Those are imitative words. So we've had caterwaul since the 1300s.
But then we have all these other words like cat burglar and catbird seed. And
right. A cat
catastrophe.
Burglar.
I don't know if catastrophe is a cat word.
That's not related to cats. But... catbird seat is, and it has a kind of a fun history. I don't know if you've ever heard the sound made by a catbird. We have catbirds in our woods where I live, and they really sound like cats. You could mistake one for a cat up a tree. They make a mewing kind of sound, mew, mew. And they always sit on high branches, and from their high positions, they harass other birds. And so... the catbird seat is known as a seat of authority or a seat of power, and it was first used, it was popularized by Red Barber, the sports writer.
A broadcaster, actually, but he used to broadcast
exactly.
Dodgers games.
Yes, sports broadcaster, sportscaster, let's say, and later the word was immortalized in a James Thurber story called The Catbird Seat.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1942.
Now, cats are generally given the feminine,
mm-hmm.
and yet mm-hmm. so many of the words that we apply are masculine.
Right, like tomcat. Something the cat dragged in. That could be either gender, actually. But that's sort of an obvious etymology. It means something distasteful. And if you've ever owned a cat, you'd know why it was called that, since they drag home disgusting things.
I would assume cat burglars, because cats can really climb
yes.
and do things.
Right, like a second story man.
Walk on narrow ledges.
Yes, yes. And cat's pajamas, of course. People periodically email me about what is cat's, why do we say the cat's pajamas?
And we don't even say it anymore. Why did people say the cat?
No, why did we say it? This is a sort of a quaint now, quaint slang from the jazz era of the 1920s. And many of these were coined by the same guy, a cartoonist named Tad Dorgan. And he coined a lot of expressions that mean anything exceptional or wonderful or superlative. And some of these rhymed, like the bee's knees, the eel's heels. You know, these are really dated. The owl's bowels and so on. And some were really silly, like the clam's cuticles, the elephant's instep. And a lot of them, of course, were about cats. The cat's meow, the cat's pajamas, the cat's whiskers, the cat's spats, and so on. The cat's cuffs. I could go on and on. But
those
of these
are all
Tad
positives.
Dorgan. Yeah, they're all positive things.
That's the cat's whiskers. That's the cat's pajamas.
Sure,
those are
sure.
all positive things.
That's just the ultimate.
On the other hand, I don't know if they still do make it, but every shoe repair store had a picture of a cat and used cat's paw heels and soles.
Uh-huh. I think that was a brand, wasn't it? A brand
yeah.
name?
I wonder why cats.
I don't know.
And then there's Cat's Deli, of
maybe
course.
Because they were quiet in their walk. Cat's Deli, yes. send a salami to your boy in the army. then there's no room to swing a cat. I've talked about that before. It's an unfortunate etymology. Mm. It's from the Elizabethan era when cats were used for, and turn off your radio if you're a sensitive soul, when they were used for target practice.
Cats were used for target practice?
Yes, they were swung in leather bottles or bags, dangled from a tree, and of course they would struggle, and they were used for archery targets. So it's an ugly etymology.
That's way before the SPCA
right,
ever was formed.
Right. Shakespeare refers to this in Much Ado About Nothing. There's a line, "If I do, hang me in a bottle like a cat and shoot at me." But then there's also cat of nine tails. So there are a lot of negative cat.
There's a cat in the bag, letting the cat out of the bag.
Letting the cat out of the bag, which is probably, we don't know this for sure, but it seems most likely that it comes from a practice of, it's a variation on the pig in a poke theme, that you think you're buying a baby pig, a suckling pig, and you get home and you find that someone's put a cat in the bag. And I have a hard time believing this etymology, because you'd have to be pretty out of it, I think, to mistake a cat struggling in a bag for a baby pig. It just doesn't seem right to me, but it's the best explanation we have.
And then I assume some of those cat words like catty corner really have nothing to do with cats, but maybe would that
right.
come out of cater corner or something?
Yes, it does. It was originally catter corner, spelled C-A-T-E-R, and it comes from an old 16th century verb, catter, spelled C-A-T-E-R, meaning to move or place something diagonally. And that in turn came from the French word for four, quatre, meaning four. And, of course, something with four corners is going to have two diagonal lines in it. And so something moving catter-corner was moving diagonally. And so it began to be spelled C-A-T-E-R corner, and then it became catty corner, and then later kitty corner in the late 19th century.
I wonder if all languages go through this.
I'm not an expert on other languages, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Because English seems to do a lot of this.
It does. It does. And that's one of the results of forming your own language out of a lot of other languages. I think it's rather cool myself.
Should we take a few calls?
Yes.
Okay, our number here is 646-829-3985. And our first caller is John from Forest Hills. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I guess I'm an old fuddy-duddy. I have two things that bother me. People say try and do or try and go or try and something, which should be try to do, try to go. It really should be an infinitive. Am I wrong?
Well, I think you're wrong. A lot of people are on your side. But
including me.
Okay, Leonard is always on the side of the angels here. But
on the side of the fuddy-duddies.
I think that try and do something is... the verb try here is in the same category as go and see if he's there.
Go to see.
Well, yeah, you could do to, or you could do the infinitive, or you could do and. Or you could say... Okay, well, there's nothing I can do to convince you.
One more quickie. I cannot stand third person using there when you're talking about a singular person.
Right.
They saw me, or that means he saw me, you know? And
right.
Am I being a fuddy-duddy with that? Because people under 40 use it all the time.
Yeah, I know. Those of us over 40 notice that use of the third person. But to tell you the truth... it's going the way of the horse and buggy.
Now, I looked up fuddy-duddy while we were talking. And you know what its origin is?
No.
Unknown.
Oh, okay. Well,
unfortunately, there's an awful
lot
of that in the English language.
That's the a rhyming nonsense phrase.
Yeah.
Right. But to get back to there, my husband and I did an article once for the Times Magazine, a language column on the use of they and them and their as singulars. And it turns out that those third person constructions were interpreted contextually. They could be singular or plural depending on the use. And this goes back centuries on centuries. And the first person to draw attention to this was, believe it or not, the first female grammarian, who was named Anne Fisher and who wrote a book in about 1745 calling attention to this and saying, hey, let's use the masculine pronoun he instead. Isn't it interesting that a female should suggest that?
And, you know, otherwise we would be saying herstory, wouldn't we?
We do say herstory.
A listener on the Upper West Side. Well, a number of people have pointed out that it was O'Sullivan's heels that had the cat.
O'Sullivan. Yes.
Yeah. So another listener, Joel from Illinois, says, "Why are words and phrases coined?"
That's a good question. I guess it's kind of like minting.
Yeah.
Coining.
It
forming
seems to me
something
it's kind
new.
Of obvious in this case. It's
right.
It's a beautiful metaphor,
isn't
it?
It's a good image. Right.
Somebody else wants to know about no-fly zone, but isn't that also obvious?
I think it's sort of literal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't fly here.
Uh-huh. Unless you're talking about exercise pants. Okay. We go now to John from Paramus. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm in the. It's raining cats and dogs out here.
Okay.
And I wanted to know about one other thing about Cats in the Cradle. And quickly, I heard the entire recording of Three Little Words this weekend on Jonathan Schwartz's show. So I'll hang up and listen to your response. And it's a really good song, too.
I love that song.
One of my favorites.
Okay.
You mentioned Raining Cats and Dogs. No one quite knows the origin of that. But there is a lot of baloney on the internet. I can't tell you how many times people have sent me this long list of etymologies supposedly from the 1500s that when people had thatched roofs, they kept their livestock on the roof. And when the roof gave way and the cats and dogs came in, the house was raining cats and dogs. Baloney. it's just one of those phrases we've never quite gotten to the bottom of. But don't believe those long lists of etymologies that are passed from hand to hand. You mentioned Cat's Cradle. That's a game played with two people and string or rubber bands. And one uses his hands to loop the string around and make a sort of jungle gym sort of construction, and then passes it on to the other person's fingers. And it's called Cat's Cradle. And that game has been around, let me see, it was first referred to in print in 1768.
But nobody knows why
Cat's
Cradle.
Nobody knows why Cat.
Yeah.
Maybe
I guess
because
it's
it looked
size.
Like an it maybe it looked like a bunch of yarn, and it's something that a cat would like to cuddle up in. I don't know.
Allison Centerpoint writes, "This is not related to cats, but I need an answer from my 12-year-old. A driver was tailgating me, and I said, the car in back of us is, and my son corrected me and said, it should be the car behind us is." Mm. His correction sounds better, but grammatically incorrect?
Oh, no. In back of is a perfectly good prepositional phrase, compound preposition, and behind is just as good. It may be that your son is all for conciseness and he has the makings of an editor or something, but I think there are times when in back of is more expressive than behind.
Chris from Brooklyn wonders about Cat's Claw, a carpenter's tool, and of course also mm-hmm. more than one way to skin a cat.
Right. I think Cat's Claw is just because it resembles a cat's claw. That's my guess. And I don't know where the phrase, more than one way to skin a cat, I don't know where that comes from. But again, I think it's literal. I don't know why a cat was chosen. There's probably more than one way to scale a fish.
I always thought it came out of modern technology, cat scans, more than one way to scan a cat. Not true?
That's a kinder way to look at it.
We'll take a little break and come back with more of your calls to 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. My guest is Patricia T. O'Connor, C-O-N-N-E-R, by the way, in case you're interested in correcting people's spellings. And we'll take more of every... We'll just deal with the English language, take care of it, clear up all of the mysteries of the English language in the next 20 minutes.
What I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days. And what I feel in my heart, they say sincerely. No other words can tell it half so clearly. Three little words, eight little letters that simply mean I love you.
We're back with Patricia T. O'Connor and your calls to 646-829-3985. Or, as I said, you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Michelle from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi. I love this segment. I have been dying to ask this question for so long. I'm a Southern New Englander, and I would love to know why Jimmy's and not sprinkles.
You know, Leonard, do you remember this? Somebody called in about this once a few years ago, and I cannot remember the answer.
But I think the answer is that there are regional differences in the way we say things. For example, I think when I used to do supermarket ads, we used to have to change the ads for Baltimore when we had bacon. We had to call it fatback. And there are just regional differences in the language.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think that in the United States, where we all watch the same television shows and pretty much have the same culture, read the same books, or if people are still reading books, that we would speak the same language, but we don't.
Mm-hmm. And I recall that when that previous caller called about that, it's the first time I heard the term jimmies.
Really?
Used for sprinkles. Yeah, I'd never heard it before. But there is an answer to that. I've read it somewhere, and I can't remember what it is.
But you only called it jimmies. Did you ever call them sprinkles?
Well, we would refer to them as sprinkles if they were, like, multicolored. But for me, I mean, sprinkles are chocolate.
Right. Jimmies are...
Jimmies are chocolate.
Jimmies are chocolate. Yeah.
I don't know. And then, I mean, we have fraps, not milkshakes. But then my grandfather used to call them...
But fraps were used here.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Everywhere I go, they have milkshakes. But my grandfather called them cabinets.
And we call them malteds here.
Yeah, well, there's a difference between a malt and a shake.
Right.
But I'm not saying a malt. Malt came in to my life with McDonald's. We said malted.
Malted, it means malted milk.
Yes.
Yes. But a malt is the same thing.
Yeah, I know, I understand.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, and we said milkshake, we never said shake. Shake was something that Sam Cooke sang about.
Uh-huh. Oh, gosh. I haven't had a good malted in so long. They're so fattening. Oh,
you know, you're making us hungry here, Michelle. I think I'm going to have to move on to another call. Thank you.
Okay, thanks so much.
And we'll put some sprinkles or jimmies in your shake.
Yum.
We go now to Diana from Manhattan. Hi, Diana. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. Oh, I'm calling about the word allurophile, meaning one who loves cats. And I cannot find it in most dictionaries. And I'd also like to know the correct spelling of it and also the etymology.
Allurophile?
Allurophile?
Are you familiar with that word?
No, I've never heard the word.
Oh, golly.
And it doesn't sound like it has any roots in it that mean cat.
Sounds like it comes more out of Tura Lura Lura.
No, I don't think so. unless you've got a singing cat, perhaps. I don't know.
No, I've never heard that. Allurophile.
Uh-huh.
No, it doesn't mean anything. By the way, I see Jimmy's is in the dictionary. Small particles of chocolate or flavored candy, origin unknown. Hmm. Well, sorry to
change the subject. Well, that surprises me that the origin is unknown.
You think everything should be accounted for, huh?
Well, we want to have the answers to all these things, don't we?
People do. In fact, that's why they will make things up, like the cats and dogs falling through the thatched roof.
Now, Diane, have you tried?
No explanation.
Have you tried spelling allurophile in a number of different ways on Google? They eventually figure out what you're trying to say.
You're right. I should Google it. I've just looked through different dictionaries. And actually, I did find it one time in a dictionary. And I can't remember if it was A-E or A-I. Because a friend of mine who was terribly erudite many years ago used that term. And I've been using it since. And people look at me and their eyes kind of glaze over. They have no idea what I'm talking about. But I am one of those allurophiles. And...
I've been looking while you've been speaking, and I haven't found anything.
Huh, interesting.
Well, thank you for calling us.
I think a word should be devised then.
I'll bet somebody in our audience knows the answer.
For sure. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure. We've been talking about positive cat things, but you know there are all those nasty things that really are, for example, calling a woman catty and talking about a cat fight.
Right. And actually, cat was at one point a name for a prostitute. It's had a lot of negative connotations. And then there's cat's paw, which is negative, which means using somebody as a tool for something. And that has a very ugly etymology. It's from a fable about a monkey who used a cat's paw to claw chestnuts out of a fire. It was a La Fontaine fable, but I think it was even older than him.
So I guess it's a nasty thing to say that women are like cats.
It is. Or that they're catty. Hmm.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I will never say that again.
Cat got your tongue when somebody's quiet.
Yeah, what is that all about?
Well, again, nobody knows exactly why cat. That's another one that sounds old, but it's only actually from about 1911.
Really? Cat
yeah.
Got your tongue.
Yeah. And nobody knows why a cat rather than some other animal. But cats are good at stealing little tidbits that they want. So maybe that has something to do with it. But I can tell you one thing. There's another fake etymology about that one, that it comes from some practice about in ancient times when liars had their tongues cut off and thrown to the lions or the cats. No, it didn't happen.
Gray from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
It's actually Gray from Montclair, but
Montclair, right? I'm sorry.
I had a friend in the Bronx who had moved here from Ireland, and I don't know if that's a clue. But when she was annoyed, she would remark that she was feeling as cranky as a bag of cats, and I thought that was an example of marvelously visual imagery.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you were familiar with that expression.
I hadn't heard it, but it is very evocative. Very good image.
it really kind of, you could tell how that she was feeling very annoyed.
That's mad.
And I would imagine a bag of cats, that those cats were very annoyed inside that sack.
Oh, yes.
Well, thank you so much for your call. A lot of people are calling in with cat things. Some of them, I think they, for example, somebody said higher than a cat. Well, that's higher than a kite.
Oh, right.
So this sort of thing happens to language, doesn't it? People mishear words.
Right. It's like a tough road to hoe. Well, it's not the road. It's a tough row to hoe. So there are a lot of expressions like that in which the words get a little confused.
And people are asking about cattywampus. I've looked it up. It does not exist in the dictionary.
Yeah, it's not in the dictionary. But cattywampus is it's derived from catty-cornered, and it means confused or confounded, and it probably has something to do with the idea of catty corner, meaning moving diagonally rather than in a straight line. So cattywampus means fouled up or confused, confounded, etc.
There are some nice ones like the self-explanatory. It's like trying to herd cats.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. They are not pack animals.
Well, and a listener wants to know, why does cat fight apply to women? Don't male cats, in fact, most often male cats get involved in those fights?
Well, I don't know if it's most often. I've had a lot of female cats who were very pugnacious. But I think cat fight, again, just means a fight between women. And it's been a derogatory term for a woman. You know, a whole bunch of cats getting together for a lunch or to tear each other apart, tear apart their enemies or friends who weren't there.
I saw that movie, The Women. It's all about women being catty, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole, if you had to describe the plot.
Right, you would.
Tony from Queens called to ask, why are people using there are a lot if there's plural and a lot is singular?
A lot can be either construed as plural or singular, depending on the context. There are a lot of people in the waiting room. There is a lot of garbage on the streets. So that's a lot can go either way.
But also he wonders about using the words separately, a lot and a lot as one word.
Oh, a lot as one word is a verb, like meaning to distribute.
Yeah, but that's with two L's.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yes, you're right. A lot is two words. Yes, you are on the side of the angels, Leonard.
I try. Anne from Brooklyn, hi, you're on the air.
Hello there.
Yes.
I just wanted to help the lady who called in about her allurophobe and allurophile question.
Uh-huh.
I trust my American Heritage Dictionary, and there it is, page 36. Allurophile is one who loves cats, from Greek, allurus, and allurophobe is one who hates or fears cats, from Greek as well.
And it's spelled A-E-L?
It's spelled A-I-L. U-R-O-P-H-I-L-E. So that's my little contribution. First-time listener, folks.
Well, thank you for calling in.
It was my pleasure. Take care.
There it is, allurophile and allurophobe, from alluros, Greek, for cat, Aloros.
I didn't
know
the Greeks call cats Aloros.
I didn't know that either. Huh. Well, we've learned something today.
And we'll try to remember it the next time somebody calls in and asks about
Jibbies
or Alorophile.
I won't remember it.
Larry from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Pat and Leonard. Parenthetically, Milton Friedman had a famous column in Newsweek, "When Cats Bark," meaning that'll be the day.
Ah.
It was about 40 years ago.
Ah.
And when I agree with Milton Friedman, cats will be barking.
Okay, I'm calling about the Japanese word tsunami. What does Pat think about using the Japanese instead of the English word tidal wave? Because a tsunami is a tidal wave that's so deep it isn't stopped by the breakwater, and it enters the harbor, and that's the literal meaning of the Japanese word. Tsunami means harbor wave, and the Australians call a tidal wave a tidal wave. What does Pat think about using the Japanese?
Well, I like the name tsunami. We had a lot of calls on tsunami when we had the tsunami in Asia, 3 years ago,
yeah.
Was it?
Was it Indonesia?
Indonesia. And I like that word. That's another example of how English, when a word works and people find it useful, we adopt it.
And tidal wave doesn't suggest the same thing.
No, not to me. Tidal wave is a little vaguer, I think.
And when I think of a tsunami, I think of exactly what we saw there and what we saw in Indonesia.
Yes. Yes.
So I think
I like it. I'm all
and
for adopting
words.
And
we often do that, don't we? In English,
we
borrow a word like pajamas or
yes,
ketchup.
Right. Pajamas, I think, is from the Indian subcontinent, if I'm not mistaken.
Gary in Manhattan writes in, one of my favorite old-time sayings is when my father used to use, nervous as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs.
Oh, I haven't heard that one in years, but no, I'm familiar with that one too. I think that's very evocative and a really great metaphor.
Because
you can just see the cat with the tail twitching back and forth.
Cats in a bag refers to drowning unwanted cats in a bag, which was common in England once upon a time, Tim in Manhattan suggests. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. Uh-huh. It does make sense.
We have gotten a lot nicer toward cats these days. We send them to the ASPCA and we euthanize them.
Well, yeah.
Aren't you glad I pointed that out?
Or even better yet is to have your animal neutered so there won't be unwanted pets.
Well, Pat, we should point out that we can never handle all the calls that come in or all the comments. But we have other ways of addressing them over the month.
Mm-hmm.
You will be back here on April 20th. But people can email you directly at mailbox@grammarphobia.com. And many do. Please don't send your comment to me. I'll just forward them to mailbox@grammarphobia.com. You can also click on Pat's blog at grammarphobia.com to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners, and you get a fair amount each month?
I do. I do try to answer everybody. It may take a little bit of time, but I'll get to you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.